My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
Okay, here we go. Now we're better. All right. Now my audio audience. Man, I got to remember to click that button. It's just a little bit off screen for me. But anyway, so welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, hour number 2. And we are, as mentioned, we're working with a brand new system. And that's interesting. I hadn't even looked at this to see. So, oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So it appears that, Evie Mux has commandeered my sound. That's why I'm so low. We'll have to figure this one out. Evie Mux keeps pushing my sound down to 39%. Every time I talk, Evie Mux grabs it and pushes it. Normally, I leave that at about 78. Yep, it's going right down, 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 down. In a second, I'm going to be muted by Evie Mux. How pleasant. Love you guys.
Don't worry, I got you.
Thank you so much for that.
It's doing an auto leveling, which you don't need because you're a professional.
Well, it's auto leveling me right out of the scene.
We'll get there.
Yeah. All right. Anyway,
go. Keep going.
Oh goodness gracious! All right. Let me try. Let me see. Let me back up from the microphone.
No, the new Rush Limbaugh.
It's still doing it. It's still doing it. Yeah, all right. That's very nice. All right.
Your audience hears you.
I'm aware that my audience... No, my audience actually doesn't hear me because I'm being muted by the microphone.
It's not all the way off. You're fine.
Yeah.
And they can't hear me, so thank God.
All right. Anyway, there's a lot going on. Let's do this, David, because I do want to get into... We were just talking about it in the green room. The whole, these aren't the real Hebrews, or this isn't the real Israel, or what have you. Folks, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we do that, I want to get an update on where we are relative to the attack and what's happening. And I know yesterday there was an effort to get in and free some hostages at the hospital. Yeah. And so I want to get an update with regards to that. Here we have on screen is a map of Israel. You can see Jordan, you can see Egypt down to the south, you can see Syria, you can see Lebanon to the north. Yemen is at the very, very bottom. It's that little orange piece that's connected to Jordan. But there are attacks that are happening from all of these areas. So talk to us about what fronts is Israel facing right now?
All right, the one thank you, and it's great to be on. Let's start with the big one right now is Gaza. Gaza is that little area. If you look at Egypt in the south, in the very lower left hand of the screen, Egypt, the green blob there, it borders Israel, which is kind of orangish brown. In between Israel and you see the area of Gaza. That is where the main war right now is taking place. Then if you go over a little bit to the right, you see this big purple area that is like a B. That is what is called the West Bank. The northern part is Judea. The northern part is Samaria. The southern part is Judea. Then if you keep going north, upwards, the yellow thing that abuts Israel on the top, that's Lebanon, and the green thing next to it is Syria. And the orange thing that sort of sticks out into them is the Golan Heights, and beneath that, the orange area that connects to the rest of Israel is the Galilee. So that's the geography. Right now what's going on, the main war is going on in Gaza. There's a quiet war that is not really that quiet going on in the West Bank. Israel's arrested about 2,000 Palestinians there. There are daily battles, gun battles, firefights. About 10 to 12 Israeli soldiers have been killed in the West Bank, and about 100 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank in these battles in the West Bank. The reason for it is because while the Palestinian Authority, which is itself a big problem and not very friendly to Israel, is in governance there, the truth is Hamas, the enemy that Israel's fighting in Gaza, is really popular and very strongly present in the West Bank. So that's happening there.
So folks, you understand what I've honed in on here on the screen, the gray areas is what we're talking about. So you can see the gray area that is Gaza, And then you can see the other gray area on the screen. It has Nablus, Bethlehem, Hebron. That's considered the West Bank. These are areas, Gaza in particular. Gaza was an area that Israel gave to the PLO. This was a part of the agreement with Yitzhak Rabin, right? Yitzhak?
Right, exactly. And in fact, all the areas were all part of Israel from 1967 onward to 1993. And in 1993, the Israelis began to give up parts of the West Bank and Gaza to the Palestinian Authority. But Israel still had a presence in both. In 2005, the Israelis completely withdrew from Gaza. There were Israeli towns and settlements there. So Israel withdrew thousands of Jews from Gaza and left the infrastructure, left the industry there too for the Palestinians to take over and get a leg up on economic development. So the Israelis completely left, completely, 100%, every last Jew, every last settlement, everything. But they left all the factories and all the warehouses and all the greenhouses behind.
Right.
The Palestinian Authority took over, which is under the PLO, under Abu Mazen. Back then it was also, just before then, it was under Yasser Arafat. And within a year, Hamas won elections, big elections, won big, and took over. And then the PLO didn't want to give up, so Hamas launched a coup, although they had won the election, so it was essentially a legitimate coup on some level. And then, so it's a state. It's an independent state. The Israelis haven't been back, haven't done anything in Gaza. After a while, missiles came over and all those sorts of things.
Right.
And had a lot of terrorism. So the Israelis started not blockading Gaza, but controlling what goes in and out. And it let anything in and out that needed to come in and out. But they did stop weapons from going in. Unfortunately, though, there's also the southern border with Egypt, and there are a lot of smuggling tunnels. So what? Obviously, a lot of weapons got into Gaza. A lot of weapons got into Gaza.
Now,
so that's what happened in October 7th. We've had about half a dozen to a dozen small wars with missiles onto Israel and so forth. But that set the stage for what happened on October 7th, which was an invasion of 3,000 to 4,000 highly sort of commando-like terrorists into Israel that was going to be followed by a wave of another 7 or 8,000. And that invasion is what led to all this. So that's where we are there.
That, right.
There's been an ongoing low-level war in the West Bank against the Palestinian Authority, which pays people to kill Jews. So there's a sort of a terror structure there. And Hamas is very powerful in the West Bank, too. They have their own militias.
Now,
so there's ongoing war there, too.
I want to go back a little bit historically. I mentioned Yitzhak Rabin.
Uh-huh.
Yitzhak Rabin is the one who entered into the agreement that essentially gave the PLO control of Gaza. Am I correct?
You are correct, yes.
And much
of the West Bank.
Okay. Now he was assassinated, as I understand it, by someone who did not believe that was a good decision, strongly disagreed with that decision.
Yes, that is correct.
Historically, looking back now at that almost 30 years later, not the assassination, that's a terrible thing, okay?
Yeah.
But the decision to do this, would you suggest maybe that it set the stage for what we have seen happen since then?
You know, you're in Texas, I'm in Washington, but in this case, you're being very diplomatic.
Okay.
It was a catastrophic failure.
Okay.
It was a catastrophic misstep that almost cost Israel its life. So, yeah, everything that is going wrong here, or 90% of everything that's going wrong here, really originates in the Oslo agreements, which gave up Gaza and major parts of the West Bank, and it really was a road marker to set up a two-state solution, which is a Palestinian state, a Jewish
right.
state, the Palestinian state being in the, all of the West Bank and all of Gaza. And luckily, with all the terrorism and so forth, that never was fully implemented. But had it been implemented, and the invasion on October 7th would have been launched from Gaza and the entirety of the West Bank and from Lebanon and from Syria, Israel would not have survived.
It's stunning to think about that. But, I mean, that is, you know, if you think back to Chamberlain, right, and his appeasement of Hitler, I mean, in essence, 50 years later, 50, 60 years later, you could look at what Yitzhak Rabin did as the fulfillment of what truly would have happened if Churchill had never stepped in.
That's right. Now, about the assassination, there are those who are close to Rabin, who were close to Rabin, Prime Minister Rabin.
Yeah.
Who claimed that at the end he was beginning to see reality for what it was. And while he wasn't going to reinvade all the territories, he was beginning to go to the very concept that may be what emerges afterwards. We don't know. But basically that Israel maintains a full security presence everywhere. And yeah, you let them run their own affairs. Who wants to run the sewers and the traffic lights? Let them have autonomy over their own lives in all aspects other than security.
Right.
And so it looked like he might have been headed there. And the irony of the assassination is it kind of saved the Oslo process, what the Oslo idea, because the myth grew. Oh, that it was going to work if only but for Rabin had not been assassinated. So the validity of Oslo was allowed to survive.
More like the myth, right? More like the myth or the legend, if you will, of it was allowed to have life breathed into it. Like in some way you were honoring the memory of him by keeping it alive, and speaking against it would be speaking against the memory of someone who was assassinated, which was then played up by the left.
Exactly. It's one, you have your martyr and focal point, but two, you also have an excuse for why Oslo failed.
Okay, so
the guy who was really clear-headed and was going to manage and navigate this through properly was assassinated, and so the peace camp got a fatal blow and peace was killed.
So that in part also sets the stage for why Israel was so vulnerable. Because there was that element that believed somehow that Israel had done all the right things. And even though, yeah, you had some missiles coming across and you had some unrest, but at the end of the day, cooler heads would prevail and they would recognize the fact that Israel was, in fact, letting them operate autonomously in their areas.
Yeah. And they thought, and there was, and this is, I think, the failure of Oslo also in its basic. Oh, these guys, I mean, the Palestinians, they're small, they're economically backward. How much of a threat really can they be? I mean, for God's sake, look at the Israeli army. It's so powerful, so high tech.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's literally on par with the U.S. military, man for man. It's not bigger. It's not as powerful, but it's definitely the quality. It's above European standards.
Sure.
It's really American level.
Well, I've talked to our some of our special forces people that I hung out with a few years back, and they all spoke about IDF as being elite, quite elite.
Yeah. So the Israelis had this attitude: "It was look. I mean, if they misbehave, we'll show them, and they'll deterrence." And that failed. That failed on October 7th. We collectively, the Israelis, the United States, did not understand the motivation. Now, the Israelis get it. The United States still doesn't. Does not understand the motivations of the Palestinians. They don't understand the faith and the determination that the Palestinians have. They don't understand the murderous and homicidal nature of Hamas, or really all these organizations like the PLO. And as a result, they didn't understand that you cannot deter them any more than you can deter a suicide bomber. So I think at the end, the Israelis really fell into the hole on that.
All right. We got about 6 or 7 minutes before Rick's going to join us. There's a lot on the other, on the, I guess you call it the alt-right side, that talks about, well, you know, these aren't really Jews. It's very crazy to me. It's almost aligning with the Black Hebrew, the Black Israel movement, that whole thing, which you and I have talked about before. But I want to bring that back in because you have such a great way to communicate the history of this.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Ashkenazi. That's a term that's used in that vernacular, and what that argument is, and what is the response to that?
Okay, well, first of all, the Jews, you know, Christianity ideal in terms of ideas considers itself the inheritor of the Jewish faith and the evolution of it. Jews didn't evolve with that, but nobody doubts in terms of Christian theology about the ethnicity of the Jews and of the Jewish people being essentially a frozen fossil of what it was at the time of Jesus on backwards. So there was never a doubt that the Jews are indigenous to that area and that they're ethnically from there. There's the KGB, the Soviets, started peddling the idea in the 60s as part of their attempt to squeeze the Israel issue into the colonial issue, the Vietnam issue, and so forth. Oh, these are really white European colonialists that really were not Jews. I mean, they actually are converts from the Khazars in the 6th century, 7th century, or much later. And it's a colonial, Israel is a colonial entry that really reflects the European white intrusion into the Middle East. And this now has been picked up by the left easily because they believe in this white privilege and DEI and critical race theory. So the Jews suddenly become the colonialist whites that are equivalent to the slave owners in the South, blah, blah, blah. So for the left, it's easy. The right, what is kind of stunning is the right's buying into this. And, you know, the evidence is overwhelming. We have continuity of communities that go all the way back to the Second Temple period. We know exactly where Jews were when and who these Jewish communities are and their whole history going back 2,000 years. So this is clear, number one. Number two, DNA in modern times, DNA is proving it without a doubt. We can actually begin to tell which Jews tended to come from the Galilee or what's now southern Lebanon and which came from more central Israel. I mean, we actually have that granularity of knowledge from DNA. And then third, there was continuous Jewish settlement.
Well, I think we have to remember, too, the dispersion, right? I mean, part of it has to do with the dispersion.
Well, when the Romans conquered Israel, there was basically one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third went to slavery, one-third were killed, one-third stayed in the northern part of Israel, in the Galilee and so forth. Those communities survived. Some of those communities survived continuously until today. Piki'in, for example, is a city in the Galilee. It has never been not Jewish. It was never exiled. It was never not Jewish. Hebron, up until 1948, had a continuous Jewish presence going back to the temple. And it was documented. Everybody, every traveler talked about it, etc. Now, in 1948, they were massacred. There were four different massacres in 22, I think, 31, 36, 39, and then 48. And they literally massacred the Hebron population out of existence.
Wow.
So the continuity was broken, but only 70 years ago, 75 years ago.
Okay.
So we know the Jews come from this area. We know the Jews today, ethnically, are the Jews of then. We also know that Jewish liturgy and practice is the same as the time of Jesus. Now, of course, the difference between Christianity and Judaism is Christianity moved onward, and Judaism is more or less frozen in time. So, you know, that's not the critique here. The peak here is Jews are just European colonialists who don't even belong there.
Well,
very odd argument for the right to be pushing.
Another piece to this is understanding how the elders of Zion, documentation plays a role in that as well. And that the history of that goes back into the 1920s, right? With communists and the Russian communists who essentially were trying to rid Russia of the Jews because the Jews represented God, and Marx and the communists needed all vestiges associated with the God of the Bible destroyed.
Yeah, you're right. You noted something. Marx's father was a convert from Judaism to Christianity. So he was of Jewish origin. But Marx was intensely anti-Semitic. He wanted Jews destroyed as a people.
Right.
I mean, not murdered. He wanted them to become communists. He did not believe in Judaism, did not believe in the Jewish peoplehood or anything. They needed to melt into the world as communists in the proletariat revolution. The communists took this document, which actually was produced by the Ohana, the Tsarist secret police, but really was internal, and they used their propaganda networks around the world starting in the 20s, exactly like you say, the NKVD, which was the predecessor to the KGB, really ran with this, and they brought this all over the world. And it's been a core structure of the Soviet propaganda network against the Jews. And it basically says there's a little tiny group of Jews who control the world, and they meet in secret. The elders of Zion meet in secret periodically to set out how, to manage this secret control of all things in the world. And that you see the various structures of these elders operating all the time. So there's this vast Jewish conspiracy. Now, who picked this up with great fervor was Hitler.
Right.
So,
right.
So Hitler very much was operating on KGB propaganda here. Well, what we're seeing nowadays is the modern communist fascist groups, the far left, are doing the same thing. They're picking up on originally KGB propaganda from the 60s and 70s. And running with it, and unfortunately, there are those on the right who are falling into it. And I see why people on the right are falling into it. They're sick and tired of these endless wars in the Middle East. And they feel that Israel and the Jews are trying to trick us
right
into these endless wars in the Middle East and get us involved and so forth. The answer I have for that is the Israelis are not trying to trick anybody. They're trying to be left alone to fight the war. Their basic message is, we will fight this war alone. We will handle this alone. Just let us win. Stop trying to impose ceasefires. Stop trying to do this and pressure.
Right.
Just let us win. So actually, from a conservative point of view, whether you are isolationist and you believe America should withdraw within our borders and to hell with the world, sorry about that French,
yeah,
or alternatively, that the United States has bigger fish to fry with the Chinese threat or the European threat, and we really can't afford all this stuff in the Middle East. If you're in either of those two camps, you should be rooting for the Israelis the most, because if they take care of their own problem, then we have a structure in the region that is pro-Western. Moderate Arab countries are going to gravitate toward Israel. And we can basically withdraw from the Middle East, and our interests and our position is secure by this very powerful alliance of Israel, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and so forth.
Right.
If, however, Israel is restrained and it doesn't win well, and then we're responsible in part for their security. They're weaker for it. They're seen as weak, so the attacks will increase because weakness invites attack.
Right.
And we will be in this constant treadmill, but it will be snowballing, but a treadmill where we constantly have to be present in order to save the region from itself. So here we have a great opportunity to win and leave through the Israelis.
Right. Well, so, and all Israel is asking for is open up the lockers for the munitions that you promised us were going to be there when we needed them. That, that's all they're saying is, and we don't want your forces. We really, you know, having your ship here, that's fine, but we're really not even interested in that. We just want the ability to be able to manage our own war and win this thing. And stop telling us we can't bomb, we can't do this, we can't do that, that basically we can't take out the enemy. You know, I think back to the military strategy that really changed relative to the end of World War II, right? I mean, our initial American military strategy had been, you go in and you utterly destroy the enemy. You destroy them to the point that they don't have the heart, they don't have the will, they don't have, they have, you've broken them so that they are not going to attack you again, period. And we changed our mentality into Korea, then we changed our mentality even more in Vietnam, and now we pretend as though we're in these places. We're really not, we're not representing America. We're there to fight with whoever it is that we pick a side to fight with, but we're not there to send that ultimate message. And that was the difference, right, between the Carter policy and the Reagan policy. The Reagan policy was, hey, I'm back to Theodore Roosevelt and carry a big stick, and if you mess with us, we're gonna put an end to you.
Exactly. I mean, ultimately, you want to shape the world's view of America that it is stupid to get in a war with us.
Yeah.
And if you keep doing surgical strikes against mid-level operatives of terrorist organizations or governments that are sending them, they're not sending that signal. You're sending that it's basically, you can manipulate America, you can get by, you can get, you know, not, you will never pay the price, neither in terms of public perception nor in terms of you as the leader of a country. And Reagan was quite different, and he made clear that our deterrence policy has shifted from city busting to killing the leadership of the Soviet Union and being able to fight a nuclear war. Now, whether that was realistic, you know, and the world still survives, we all know that that was difficult. But we also know that we made the point to the Russians, you will not fight a nuclear war and win.
Right.
We will hit you back and we will fight the war also. So we're not going to just surrender. And that was the key. Reagan looked at victory again, victory, mm-hmm. instead of management of mm-hmm. conflict. And what failed on October 6th in Israel, 7th in Israel, was management of the conflict. Israel needed to win and defeat the idea that Hamas represented, and it didn't. It deterred it, which is a management structure, and it didn't even deter it.
Right, and now we're in this situation where you know Hamas is not only rising, it seems to me gaining momentum and rising over there, but they're gaining momentum and rising. There have been attacks in Germany. There have been attacks in France. You know, these you could consider these protests to be a form of attack. You know, we're in a serious mess.
What we're seeing is the emergence globally of a red, green, black, namely red is communist, green is Islamist, and black is fascist, a communist, fascist, Islamist coalition.
Okay.
That operates globally on behalf of a large bloc of nations, including China under the communists and Russia, unfortunately, as well as Iran and Venezuela. And now, unfortunately, we've lost Brazil and Chile and Colombia, and we'll lose more in Latin America because this administration seems to like that or tolerate that in the least, as well as North Korea and so forth. So this is part of a larger coalition. So they, intersectionality really is an alliance of evil. And what you're seeing is they're hooking up with the DEI, the diversity, equity, inclusion crowd, the CRT, critical race theory crowd, domestic American leftists and fascists are being crystallized into a coalition on behalf of this larger assault on the whole Western idea, the American idea of freedom, the American idea of the Judeo-Christian core, the American idea of our way of life. I mean, literally what we used to call, you know, hot dogs, apple pie, Chevrolet, and baseball. So
and the destruction of our liberties. We're going to take a quick break. Correct. When we come back, the president of Americans for Liberty, Rick Vanning, is going to be with us, and he'll be joining our conversation, David, you and I, and Rick, and I'm looking forward to to his thoughts on the very same thing that you're just now talking about. I mean, that's exactly this red, green, black axis.
By the way, I add, remember, when we talk about black, we're talking fascists, black people.
Right. Well, or we're talking about what drives somebody like the BLM, which is communism. I mean, they are a fascist communist organization.
BLM is this mixture of communism, fascism.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back right after this. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Rick Vanning, president for Americans for Liberty. My goodness. All right, anyway, we'll get Rick in here joining David and I, and right after this brief break.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II.
Okay. Hello, gentlemen. Rick, can you hear me? Rick's muted.
He might be muted.
Yeah. I muted him.
Oh, unmute him.
I just asked for, I think he has to officially. I just made the ask.
All right, now he's unmuted.
Okay.
All right.
I thought I was being muted remotely.
Ah, you were. Christian was trying to keep you quiet. I don't know, this guy.
Well, I'm probably wise. probably wise.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. So that iPhone looked better and probably had better network, just like you said, Rick.
The horizontal iPhone did look better, but this is also, this will be better.
We'll get you a hardwire at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't. This is always going to be done off of Wi-Fi, so. And suppose I had 200 Mbps, so it shouldn't be bad, but that's okay.
The office will be hardwired. The office.
This is at home.
Do you need me to set up a scene for you, Pastor Greg, or do you want to go use the dynamics?
I'm working on it right now.
All right, I'll prep a dynamic as a backup.
1, 2, 3. Except that it didn't fill right. That's odd.
Well, so just go to the dynamic and take a look at that. I'll actually pull it this way. Take a look at.
Yeah, that'll work. We can do that.
Okay. All right, cool.
I like the fact you have commercials going in the middle.
It's great to be able to talk back in.
Well, then this was the thing that with StreamYard I wasn't going to be able to do. I wasn't going to be able to have the conversation with you guys in the in-between while the commercial played over the air.
Right.
And so that killed it. I mean, because, you know, we all have a relationship together, and, you know, I've known David for over 10 years. Rick, I've known you for over 10 years, so that's great. But when I get a new guest on, in the 2 or 3 minutes before I take them on the air, I try to build that familiarity with them in the green room so that they are comfortable when we go on air. And if I can't do that, that changes the entire tenor of the program.
Oh, 100%. It's just an interview at that point.
Well, yeah, it's at which anybody can do an interview, but I don't want an interview. I want a real conversation, in an environment that's comfortable for us to feel like we can just say what we need to say. All right, so Rick, what we've talked about is we've done a map. We've talked about where the attacks are coming from. David has
pull it up. can add him if you need me.
Okay. Don't talk. David David has explained Ashkenazi and the background of that, because the alt-right is kind of pushing that. And then we were getting into the communists and the elders of Zion and where that came from. So we've talked about it. Now we got to the green, black, red axis thing. And I thought that that would be a good place to take the break and then have you come in, and maybe you can ask some questions about that as well. Yeah. And
David, I'm gonna just to prepare you, I'm going to ask about how that axis survives, as some people recognize the domestically, a lot of liberal Jewish community were backers of that access, and now they find themselves on the outside looking in.
That's right.
At what point do other members of that access realize that they are merely pawns being used? So that's what I'm going to ask you.
Right, right. Well, that's a great question.
All right, so we are 19, 18 seconds.
I can't hear anything over these ads.
Oh, Christian can tell you how to kill the ads. There is a way for you to mute the ads, Rick.
10 seconds. You guys are good. 10 seconds.
Yeah, but Rick, next time you need to tell Rick how to mute the ads. Here we go. Coming in. And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. It is my pleasure to welcome my good friend, President of Americans for Limited Government, Mr. Rick Manning. Rick, welcome. Good to have you with me.
Happy to be here. And this is an important conversation.
And, of course, Dr. David Wormser continues with us, senior analyst for the Center for Security Policy and Middle East Affairs analyst, and a gentleman that I've been in close contact with, for quite some time. But we have really been talking and communicating on what's happening in Israel. All right. So, Rick, you have a question for David. Let me let you ask that. Rick got muted. Christian?
Okay, David, can you hear me now?
All right.
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay, great. The left has always had a strange alliance where you have gays who align with the Muslims who throw them off of buildings, aligned with liberal Jewish communities that have natural enmity, aligned with environmentalists and labor, environmentalists who won't put all the labor out of business, out of work. It's a, you know, it's kind of this weird mishmash of people who are consolidated around the idea of power, but not very much so around any common sense alliance where they can be sustained. How much is what's happening in Israel and worldwide, the Muslim hate for Jews, the admission that they want to kill Jews from the river to the sea and all over the world, how much is that having an impact on taking down at least a part of that alliance? And will others see that and say, for instance, some of the gays see that and say, wait a second, we can't be in alliance with people who throw us off of buildings?
You know, Rick, this is an amazingly important and good question. And what you're really hitting at is that the traditional Judaism has been penetrated. That is, the Jewish community has been penetrated. The KGB uses the same strategy that the Nazis did, which is fifth column activity, to try to infiltrate into your enemy and essentially hijack his internal debate to turn it against him and destroy him. And we see that with and all these domestic organizations in America. Essentially, if you look at their pedigree carefully, you can trace them back to the 60s and the Soviets' attempts to penetrate America and pervert our debate. Unfortunately, the Chinese now have joined in that, using TikTok and all sorts of other things and buying Hollywood. So it's a much softer and in many ways more nefarious and insidious penetration. But the basic point there is to destroy the foundations of the West. And the foundations of the West, one of them obviously are liberties and freedoms. Two is the family structure. Three is the Judeo-Christian core. And four is overall our faith. in our history. And then five is our history, the history not only of our last 250 years, but going back 1,000 years to the Magna Carta and so forth. So it's a calculated strategic assault on all the foundations of America to destroy it. And with that, the entire West. So what you're really seeing now with this red-green, red being communist, green being Islamist, and black being fascist, this red-green-black alliance is they're all working together now to really burrow down and focus in internally in the West to destroy the West's foundations. Now, the Jews, the way they do it is they penetrated into the Jewish community. And they're trying to make the point that, hey, if you Jews put progressivism as such a great idea and you start bending your religion toward progressivism, this is really an attempt to destroy Judaism from within. Because they know that Jews cannot easily be destroyed from without. You know, we've been around 4,000 years. It's been tried. It hasn't succeeded. Because the idea that is behind Judaism and Christianity is much too powerful. So they have to infiltrate it and destroy it from within. And there arose the very deep need for progressive Judaism, for the radical left, for the communist left. And they unfortunately succeeded very heavily among many Jews, because many Jews thought this is the ticket out of being different. This is and in modern times, when faith is under assault and ethnicity and critical race theory, you don't want to be the bad guy. You want to be accepted by your college buddies and so forth. The progressive Judaism became the ticket to be accepted.
Well, isn't it from biblical terms? You know, Jews were always warned to not assimilate. And isn't this exactly. Nothing more, nothing less than cultural assimilation that destroys the identity and destroys the core of Judaism?
Absolutely, absolutely. That is exactly it. And it was more than in the Bible. It's in the Talmud. It's all the way throughout history. This temptation towards seeing the great salvation out.
And this is also, David, what you and I have talked about for the last 6 months. You know, I was going back and looking 29 years and or weeks ago. Now going on 30. You and I were on saying, number one, that Israel's already at war, and then predicting that this event was going to happen, and that it was the prelude to that was the things we talked about the manufactured riots in the streets, the entire battle over judicial reform, the efforts by the left in Israel to create a coup against. And yes, they focused on Netanyahu, but it was in reality a coup against the people of Israel, because for the first time since 1948, in 75 years, the people of Israel actually embraced their roots. We are a Jewish people. We are God's people. This is God's country. And we're going to begin to act under the auspices of being a godly people again, and reject socialism, communism, progressivism, the LGBTQ agenda, the things that God has said are an abomination, killing babies. We're rejecting all that, and in great part, that was why there was this upheaval going on, and it was one of the reasons that I went on the 7th. When Steve Bannon and Charlie Kirk were espousing the things that they were saying, because I needed them to understand that they were wrong. They were wrong.
Yeah, this is all part of the attack on, what you described, the dynamics, that's exactly what's going on. And so the progressive Judaism was an attack to destroy traditional Judaism. The left in Israel is an attempt to destroy the Jewish state. Maybe they think they can still survive as some European soulless materialist state. They're deluded, just like the progressive Jews were deluded to think this won't lead to their destruction. What we're seeing now is some more traditional liberal Jews and some progressive Jews are beginning to realize, wait a second, you're out to kill us. What is this? We were your friends. So there is somewhat of an epiphany going on. But unfortunately, I think the bulk of progressive Jews just don't get it and won't get it, and they will fade away into history. What has happened, though, is I think the progressive camp has lost their foothold in traditional Judaism to destroy it.
David, I would argue that, though, that here domestically, the events that have happened over the last 5 weeks have caused massive numbers of gun sales, for instance, in South Florida, which has a heavy Jewish population.
Absolutely.
Populations that rabbis are now urging people to go arm themselves. And that is a recognition that those who have traditionally hated them still hate them. The progressive dream of assimilation has failed and was always doomed to fail. And that when they say never again, they now have to take it seriously, because again is now. And that is and that change is, I think, a catastrophic shift for the Democrats, because
I agree.
It's a rejection of all the promises of progressivism.
And let me add in, and let me just add in too, from the Christian perspective, please understand, folks, that the disinformation campaign to try to create this separation and Christians separating out from supporting Israel, from supporting the Jewish people, this is a deception straight from the enemy, okay? Don't get caught in that camp. We are directly connected to the God of this Holy Bible right here, this Word of God, and it's the same Word of God. And, you know, you mentioned in our previous half hour talking about Christians moving on and becoming more progressive. What you meant by progressive is this, and this is the separation point. Do we believe that Yeshua has arrived and made his first appearance on earth or not? Do we believe that the evidence was sufficient to support the claims of who we believe to have been the Messiah, the Christ, or not? And understand this, and David, I would just insert this. When you say the Jews didn't buy, well, the larger percentages, yes, but the first Christians were Jews. Every single one of them. Every single Christian in the world at the time that Christ died, rose again, and ascended was a Jew. Period, end of story. It all started there. It wasn't just that Jesus was a carpenter and he was a Jew. It was that every single Christian, because they looked and they listened and they reasoned with Peter, they reasoned with Paul, and they said, you know, you make a pretty good argument. And I will say this, there are rabbis in Israel today, some of them at the very highest level, who have finally come to a place looking at the archaeology, looking at all of the evidence and saying, you know, we think maybe that he really was who he said that he was. We're not trying to create splits.
Well, one thing is very, very clear. When you look at the teachings of Jesus, there is a tremendous amount that is in common with Talmudic scholarship at the time.
Yeah.
So it's consistent. This is not a revolutionary departure. This is not like Muhammad sitting in a cave claiming he got a new revelation.
Right.
That is completely at odds with the Bible and completely at odds with the history that we know of. This is not Marx suddenly realizing, you know, let's just throw it all out and change in a revolutionary way the nature of man.
Right.
This is a very consistent and very structured evolutionary moment. Not a revolution.
Not a departure. It's not a departure, and that's the biggest thing. I remember talking with Avi years ago. Right. You know that from a Jewish perspective, there was this sense of, oh my goodness, you know, the concern is that we're leaving Judaism. That's the traditional view of the Jewish person. And I know that wasn't where we were going to go this morning, but I apparently that's where the Holy Spirit wants us to go in conversation. So here we go.
but I mean, to bring it back, that the whole point is the Jewish community in America has had a utopia because the American idea was so deeply intertwined with its Christian faith.
Yes.
Which is deeply intertwined with its Jewish origins.
Yes.
We were the New Jerusalem.
Yes, we stand as one. We stand as one.
And because of that, Jews felt safe. For the first time in 2,000 years, they felt safe.
As they should.
By 1940, and by 1950, about more than half the population of Jews in the world lived in America.
Yep.
And it was a golden age. But the golden age was since before America. It was in the colonial period already. Because of the ideas that the Americans had in coming here, of the New Jerusalem, the fresh start that returns to faith, and so on and so forth. So when you're really attacking America, attacking the Jews is part and parcel of that. And that is what this is really about right now.
This is
really a back door. Well, not even a back door.
No, we're at the front door, kicking the door down.
One of the front door attacks. Along with attacking the family structure, et cetera. Yep. This is a critical pillar of the West, is the treatment of the Jews. And the attack on it is an attempt to start taking pillar by pillar down of the entire American free structure.
Rick,
and
final
the idea
thoughts.
Of America.
Rick, I want to give you the final word, sir.
Yeah, standing together with Israel right now is standing for America. There's no, you can't separate them. And if you don't believe me, listen to what the Ayatollah says in Iran when he calls Satan, you know, Israel, little Satan, that's the great Satan. The people who want to destroy us don't separate Israel and America, and we'd be idiots to do so to ourselves. We stand as one. We have to stand as one, and it is, and that's. That's just listening to your enemy and believing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the good thing here is the Israelis aren't asking us to fight for them. They're asking us just to let them fight and provide diplomatic cover for them being not restrained. And if needed, basically we're resupplying them on some level because we had pulled out the huge stockpile that was there during the Ukraine war. So we're right now kind of resupplying it. So basically, they're not asking us to fight for them. So great. The American idea is moved forward without us having to pay a price in our own blood at the moment.
And Israel doesn't want us to. And the only time that we would involve our own blood is, and Iran is doing that, are the attacks that the Iranians are doing on literally on our basis. On our basis, which an American military base represents American soil. And therefore, they are attacking our country. And we know that because Islam has declared war on America. We can't get into that right now because I've got another segment we got to do. But that is a huge issue that has to be addressed. Islam has declared war. And you're watching a Democrat Party, by the way, that is now beginning to run in the primary individuals against the people who were sitting in Congress who were a part of that Islamic war and the jihad that they're carrying out in our own Congress against our country. David, thank you for being with us. Obviously, you will be back, I know. I wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I'll be off next week for Thanksgiving, but I wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Rick, I know that you will be back with me again in 2 weeks. A happy Thanksgiving to you as well. And my phone is around here somewhere. There it is. All right. We will be back after this brief break as we begin our next hour of programming coming up right after this. God bless you, and may he continue to bless all of us and keep us safe. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Tim Schaff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years.
Okay. Thank you, David. Oh, you're muted.
Excellent, yeah.
Okay. All right, brother. Hey, thank you.
Signing off on my end.
All right, take care. No, God bless. Wonderful. All right, that was awesome. Bye-bye now.
Bye.